Africa, rise and shine. Africa, zola. Africa, amuka na unai.
Good morning and a very warm welcome to Africa Rise and Shine. This is Channel Africa from an African perspective, and we're coming to you live from Johannesburg in South Africa. We are on the frequencies 7230 kHz on the 41 meter band to Southern Africa and on 11925 kHz on the 19 meter band to West Africa, as well as DSTV's audio bouquet channel 802. I'm Lulu Gabu in studio with Anne Musa, Tabiso Lohoko and Figile Ngwati. In our top stories on Africa Rise and Shine at the SAWA, South Africa's former president returns to court to face corruption charges. Sudan offers to host peace talks between South Sudan rivals. And a new report says Zimbabwe lacks reforms to ensure fair elections. South Africa is set to be voted onto the UN Security Council. In economics news, a G7 summit set to get underway in Canada, and in sports news, it's all systems go for this weekend's Comrades Marathon. But first up, the news with Anne Musa.
A very good morning to you. I'm Anne Musa. Security is tight in and around the Durban High Court in South Africa's KwaZulu-Natal province ahead of former President Jacob Zuma's court appearance this morning. Zuma faces 16 counts of fraud, money laundering and racketeering. The charges emanate from the multi-million US dollars arm deal in the 1990s, in which Zuma's alleged to have received a bribe in order to influence the tender process. Njabula Ntugwa reports.
Thousands of Zuma's supporters are expected to hold a march this morning and later gather outside the Durban High Court, where former President Jacob Zuma is due to make his second appearance in this case. Police are out in full force to ensure safety and security. Zuma supporters began their activities yesterday with a motorcade followed by a night vigil at Albert Park. Various roads in the Durban CBD will be closed from 8 o'clock this morning. Zuma, who has maintained his innocence, is expected to address the crowd after his appearance.
Meanwhile, Carl Niels of the MK Military Veterans Association maintains the charges against Zuma are politically motivated.
We feel that someone with an illustrious liberation career such as Comrade Jacob Zuma deserves our support as a comrade, and also deserves our support because we believe that these charges that have been arraigned against him for now over 15 years are politically motivated, and that a deliberate atmosphere had been created over years of vilification of Comrade Jacob Zuma, which will make it impossible for him to receive a free and fair trial.
Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza says he will support whoever succeeds him when his term ends. In a surprise move, he announced he would step down when his term expires in 2020. Nkurunziza, who has been in power since 2005, decided to run for re-election in 2015, a move that plunged Burundi into political crisis. Nkurunziza was speaking as he signed into law a new constitution, which extends presidential terms from 5 to 7 years.
I am committed and I am well prepared with all my heart, all my mind and all my strength to support a new president that we will vote for in 2020.
Zimbabwe's opposition movement for Democratic Change Alliance has launched its election policy document. The party promises to implement diverse and innovative policies that will transform Zimbabwe into a middle-income economy by 2023. The MDC Alliance now joins other political parties, the ruling ZANU-PF, the Rainbow Coalition under Joyce Mujuru, and a splinter MDC party under Thokozani Kube that have launched their election manifestos ahead of the July 30 general election. ZANU-PF launched its election manifesto under the theme Unite, Fight Corruption, Develop, Re-engage and Create Jobs. And finally, the French Parliament has voted to ban the use of mobile phones by learners in primary and junior high schools. The government says the new law will improve concentration in class. The BBC's Lucy Williamson has more.
The new law was a signal to French society, the government said, and would help stop classroom distraction, cyberbullying and access to pornography. Speaking to lawmakers before the vote, the Education Minister Jean-Michel Blanquer said that being open to the technologies of the future didn't mean that France had to accept all their uses. Under the new rules, schoolchildren up to the age of 15 will have to keep their mobile phones out of sight when on school premises. But critics say that teachers will not be able to enforce the ban, and opposition parties have described it as useless.
And that's the news. Headlines at 8:30 Central African Time.
Let's talk about it.
Hi, I'm Joe Manuia.
And I'm Tabisa Jala.
Join us at 9 a.m. Central African Time. Let's talk about it.
A program on AIDS and other social issues.
A program that will encourage a positive lifestyle to young people affected and infected.
Let's talk about it.
At 9 a.m. Central African Time on Channel Africa.
Africa, rise and shine. Africa, zola. Africa, amuka na unai.
It's 8:07 Central African Time and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine. We're coming to you live from Johannesburg in South Africa. Burundi's long-serving President Pierre Nkurunziza promised on Thursday to step down when his term ends in 2020, easing fears of fresh violence in that country. Nkurunziza had been widely expected to take advantage of recent changes to the constitution to stand for two more terms, raising concerns that Burundi would see a repeat of the unrest that erupted after he stood for a third time in 2015. Opposition politicians who had accused him of trying to cling to power gave the statement a guarded welcome. Bernard Bankukira reports from Bujumbura.
Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza promulgated this Thursday morning the new constitution, a very controversial constitution that was believed to be a maneuver he planned to stay on power for more presidential terms till 2034. Just after signing the new text, he made a speech to the nation in Bugendana district in the central province of Gitega before a huge crowd that had attended the ceremony of presentation of the new constitution. In his speech, one was expecting two speeches like, "If the people ask me," or "In case my party members ask me to represent them," and the likes. President surprised by announcing that he's not running again in the 2020 elections. Recalling his 2015 presidential oath, he informed he cannot break the promise.
When a president takes oath, he swears to respect the constitution in all its provisions. In the former constitution that guided our oath of August 20, 2015, as well as the new constitution that we signed today, both clearly defines presidential terms limits. Let me remind Burundians and the international community that in my speech when I took oath on that day, I said, I swear to observe all provisions of the constitution in terms of this last term that you entrusted me. Our forefathers said a wise man never breaks his oath. In the ideology of CNDD-FDD that brought up all wisdom and loyalty at the foundation of our party and all wise Burundians as a visionary for the CNDD-FDD, I would like to inform Burundians and the international community that I will never break my oath. My term ends in 2020. I'd like to urge all Burundians and the world not to fall into the trap of wrong critics on the presidential terms of the current president and on the new constitution. From now on, bear in mind that This constitution was not drafted for President Pierre Nkurunziza, as chanted by enemies of Burundi since many days ago. This constitution has been revised for the benefit, pride and better future of all Burundians. On my side, I pledge from the bottom of my heart to support the new president that will be elected in 2020.
President Pierre Nkurunziza challenged the attitude of the international community towards the constitutional review. For him, it's a double standard to question the process, as so many countries continue to do the same without being worried.
When we organize a constitutional referendum in Burundi, it is not a disaster. We have neighboring countries that have organized referendums on their constitutions in this region, in Rwanda, in Uganda, in Tanzania, in Congo, in Chad, in Ivory Coast, even in Europe. They all organize constitutional referendums, but not lamentations. Now, what's wrong with Burundi? This is a question we ask to the international community. What is wrong with Burundians to manage their country? We did nothing wrong. We must stand up for our sovereignty. The constitutional referendum that you organized is in line with our fight for our sovereignty.
The constitutional referendum in Burundi was held on May 17, 2018. The proposed amendments to the constitution were approved by over 73% of voters, while over 19% of voters opposed it, and according to final results announced by the Independent Electoral Commission and then by the Constitutional Court. The only opposition coalition, led by the former rebel Agathon Rwasa, opposed the new constitution and thus did not attend the ceremony. They lodged a complaint before the Constitutional Court, urging it to invalidate the process and organize a new and well-organized referendum. They denounced the intimidations, abductions and arbitrary arrest, threats and harassment against their members during the whole process. The Constitutional Court, however, dismissed all the complaints and endorsed the results. Among the key changes in the new constitution includes the extension of the presidential term from 5 years to 7 years, as president is not allowed to serve more than two consecutive terms. For Channel Africa, this is Bernard Bankokira, reporting from Bujumbura.
Human Rights Watch has warned that the refusal by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to reform electoral laws discredits the harmonized elections in July this year. Concerns were raised over government's use of security forces in electoral processes, violence and intimidation by the ruling ZANU-PF. The report calls Zimbabwe lack of reforms risk credible elections was launched in the capital Harare yesterday amid concerns by the opposition MDCT that ZANU-PF is interfering with electoral processes. Simon Muchema reports from Harare.
The Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa and his ruling ZANU-PF have been accused of meddling with the independence and affairs of the Independent Commission, Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, ZEC. This is likely going to discredit the credibility of the 2018 polls to be held on the 30th of July. In their report titled Zimbabwe, Lack of Reforms Risks Credible Elections, launched in the capital Tuesday, Human Rights Watch warned President Mnangagwa against political interference. Speaking to the media during the launch, Human Rights Watch Southern African Director Dewama Vinga said Zimbabweans have been for too long deprived the chance to elect leaders of their own choice.
In Zimbabwe, there is lack of reforms that risks credible elections. We call on President Mnangagwa to act on his pledge for free and fair elections. We ask President Mnangagwa to go beyond mere rhetoric and take genuine steps to level the playing field for all candidates and their parties. A key step would be whether state media gives equal coverage and access to all political parties without bias or favor. Zimbabwe's military and other state security forces have for many years interfered with the nation's political and electoral affairs, adversely affecting the right of Zimbabweans to vote for candidates of their choice.
Dewa warned political violence is on the increase as the country gears for July 30th harmonized elections owing to interference by the military. Currently, at least 15% of the administrators at ZEC are members of the military, Mavinga said.
President Mnangagwa and his administration should level the electoral playing field by preventing the military from engaging in partisan politics or interfering in electoral processes and taking strong action to deter violence and intimidation by the military during the campaign period and also during elections. The military leadership should publicly demonstrate its commitment to a fair election process and not interfere with the outcome of the vote. The role of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, which is constitutionally charged with overseeing the 2018 elections, is also of particular concern. The Commission has not demonstrated independence or impartiality.
Zimbabwe Democracy Institute Director Dr. Petsai Ruhanya said the voters' role is key in this year's elections, but up to now, and a week before the nomination court, no one is yet to get the voters' role.
And to show that militarization of ZEC, we are 7 days before the nomination court. The voters' role is not known where it is. It is secret. But interestingly, it is only secret to the opposition, but definitely not secret to ZANU. And this was one major area of contestation, the electoral field, how the elections are run, and the ubiquitous nature of the military in the political and the electoral affairs of Zimbabwe. In fact, since Rhodes, if you want, or since 1890, or the Pioneer Collab, the state has never been this militarized, even not under Mugabe.
Tamuka Mamboa, Executive Secretary for the Institute of Public Affairs in Zimbabwe, dispelled ZANU-PF's assertions that MDC is calling for reforms that require an act of parliament. He warned issues being raised by those in the opposition are genuine and only require a change of administration.
You don't need to change the law to say ZBC should stop hate speech and campaigning for one political party. That is simply an administrative issue which doesn't need a change of an act of parliament. It's more of a change in management and the interior policy to say all political parties will be given equal access. You don't need to change the law to say Justice Priscilla Chigumba should stop lying that there's a link for a provision of voters' role or on the website of ZEC. We don't need to legislate against lying. We simply have to stop lying, period. And by doing that, by stop lying and providing the voters' role, it means you would have a free and fair election. You don't need to change the law to say ZEC should be demilitarized when you've got the chairperson of ZEC admitting that we've got 15%. And mind you, they're admitting 15%. These are official. They're assuming they're being economical with the truth. It could be more.
In Harare, Zimbabwe, for Channel Africa, this is Simon Muchemwa.
Are you interested in generating business leads, networking, forming new partnerships, and igniting growth opportunities? Then you will be interested in the Vision 2030 Summit. Themed Skills, Economic Growth and Investment, the summit takes place from the 20th to the 21st of June at Emperor's Palace in Ekurhuleni, South Africa. Speakers include Bonang Mohale, Tsidiso Matuna, Nomalungelo Gina, Sai Mamabolo, Kanyisile Kweyama, and Risenga Maluleka. Space is limited, but there is still time to book seats now at vision2030.co.za. That's vision2030.co.za. Or you can join Channel Africa on both days when we will be broadcasting live from the Vision 2030 Summit. Channel Africa, bringing you the African perspective.
It's 8:19 Central African time and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir has offered to host peace talks in Khartoum between South Sudan's bitter rivals, President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. Bashir's offer comes just days after the UN Security Council adopted a resolution that gave South Sudanese warring sides 1 month to reach a peace deal or face possible sanctions. South Sudan, the world's youngest nation, formed after splitting from the north in 2011, descended into war in December 2013 when Kiir accused his former deputy Machar of plotting a coup. James Shimanyula reports.
Already, South Sudan President Salva Kiir has accepted to meet his main political and military rival, Riek Machar. The rebel leader's communication spokesman, Mabior Garang, son of the late veteran fighter and founder of Africa's newest nation, Johnny Garang, confirms in a terse statement that Machar is ready to meet Kiir on a date to be announced shortly by the authorities in Khartoum, the venue of the meeting. Kenya's opposition leader, Raila Odinga, was expected in South Africa ahead of the setting of the date for the meeting to meet Machar and explain to him the importance of the Khartoum meeting. This development comes less than 3 weeks after East Africa's Regional Trade Bloc Intergovernmental Authority on Development, in short IGAD, proposed at the South Sudan peace talks in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, that Kiir should meet Machar to hold talks and sign a new peace agreement at any venue in East Africa or Southern Africa. The peace agreement that Machar and Kiir signed in 2015 collapsed before it was fully implemented. The collapse triggered political and military confrontation between Machar and Kiir in the capital Juba and other strategic parts of the country where their fighting forces were stationed. Up to now, the fighting is still raging, with the United Nations estimating that more than 18,000 people have been killed over the past 5 years. Sudan's Foreign Affairs Minister Diridir Mohamed Ahmed, speaking in Arabic from Sudan's capital Khartoum, said, "I confirm that President Omar Hassan Ahmed al-Bashir is planning to host Riek Machar and Salva Kiir in Khartoum." South Sudan Acting Foreign Affairs Minister Martin Elie Lomoro confirms that President Salva Kiir is aware of the invitation to attend the Khartoum meeting.
"The President has warmly received the invitation and the initiative and have agreed that this be taken forward."
A Juba-based political and military expert, Jameida Kuol, sheds light on what should be expected the day Machar and Kiir end their meeting in Khartoum.
"We expect that actually, at the end of this meeting, there must be some level of a package, which is a gift to the people of South Sudan. And we are looking at the possibility of responses like, okay, enough is enough. They should be able to rise above their self and put the country first."
Also echoing remarks made by political and military expert Jameida Kuol is one of South Sudan's prominent human rights defender and activist, Rajabu Muhandisi.
"They should put South Sudan first and above all, above their personal interests and above the interests of their parties. Secondly, they should move straight to agree to lead the process of reconciliation, that is popularizing discussions in Addis and hopefully an agreement as a revitalized agreement, that they should start to popularize that it is their initiative as leaders of the different parties to pursue this process in order to restore peace in our country."
The question that arises is what Muhandisi expects Machar and Kiir to discuss in Khartoum.
"We also expect them to discuss some of the contentious issues, especially on transitional governance arrangements and transitional security arrangements, issues that have not been fully agreed upon by their delegations in Addis."
That was renowned South Sudan human rights defender and activist Rajabu Muhandisi commenting on the meeting that is to be held in Sudan's capital Khartoum between South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and his main political and military rival Riek Machar. Reporting for Channel Africa, this is James Shimanyula.
South Africa is preparing to join the United Nations World Body for Peace and Security for the third time in just over a decade. It's expected to be voted onto the UN Security Council on Friday. It would become one of five countries to win a non-permanent seat on the 15-member council. But South Africa, a long-time campaigner for UN reform, is asking for more than just another two-year term. Nick Harper reports from New York.
Endorsed by the African Union and running uncontested, South Africa's bid to join the UN Security Council looks guaranteed. It still needs at least 129 votes from the 193 UN members, but in both 2006 and 2010, Pretoria gained more than 180 votes. South Africa plans to use its two-year term to reassert its hope for a more permanent position at the table. Simon Adams is from the Global Centre for the Responsibility to Protect.
There should be permanent African representation. I mean, I think we definitely need Security Council reform. We've got a kind of 20th century UN struggling to deal with 21st century problems. And, you know, the victors of the Second World War still dominating that body.
But changing more than 70 years of council rules is easier said than done. Here's World Policy Institute fellow Jonathan Crystal.
Talking about UN reform as a priority for any new incoming non-permanent member is sort of what everybody says. And yet it doesn't actually happen. And I suspect that it probably won't happen in this case.
South Africa plans to prioritize multilateralism and the peaceful resolution of global conflicts with an emphasis on the African continent. It's a proponent of more women in peacekeeping, and it will push for free and fair elections later this year in Zimbabwe and the Democratic Republic of Congo. But experts are unsure if it will succeed in breaking the council deadlock on issues like Syria and Gaza. Here's Simon Adams again.
I think it's incumbent upon the South Africans as they come into the council to get in touch with those finest traditions of South African politics in terms of standing up for human rights and to make that difference, because the council is deeply divided. And I think there is a sense in which states are being asked to choose, are you on this side of the divide, are you on that side of the divide? Well, I think South Africa could, in some ways, be a bridge.
South Africa goes into Friday's election in a particularly strong position, but will 2 years be enough to achieve the UN and global changes it desires? Nick Harper, New York.
A former South Africa's President Jacob Zuma supporters braved chilly weather to be part of a night vigil held at Albert Park in Durban in the KwaZulu-Natal province ahead of his court appearance. Zuma is expected to appear in the Durban High Court today, facing 16 counts of fraud, money laundering and racketeering. Fanele Mhlongo has more.
Former President Jacob Zuma supporters were chanting slogans and singing pro-Zuma songs during a night vigil organized by Interfaith Leadership. These supporters from various parts of KwaZulu-Natal and other provinces were dressed in ANC colors. Zuma's charges emanate from multi-million rand arms deal procurement in which Zuma is alleged to have received a bribe in order to influence the arms deal tender process. Zuma was first charged with corruption in 2005. That same year, his then financial advisor Shapiro Sheikh was convicted of two counts of corruption and one of fraud. He was sentenced to 15 years imprisonment. In 2009, the then head of the NPA advocate Mokode Dimshem withdrew charges against Zuma, a decision that was later challenged by the Democratic Alliance. This week, NPA head Sean Abrams refused a request by former President Jacob Zuma for the state to withdraw his corruption case. The night vigil kicked off with a motorcade which paraded through the CBD. Fewer people gathered last night than during the night vigil before Zuma's first court appearance in April. Amongst the people who attended last night's event were Zuma's son Edward, MKMVA spokesperson Carl Niehaus, the provincial ANC Super Zuma, and Black First Land First members. Zuma's supporters say they believe he is innocent. She says he was their president for 10 years and was removed harshly. She says she decided to come again to the night vigil as she came in the previous court appearance. She says she loves him for things that he has done for South Africans. She says as they are told this, there are charges against him. According to South African constitution, a person is innocent until proven guilty by the court. He says he's still an ANC member, that's why they support him. He says he wishes all charges against him can be withdrawn so that he can walk freely. Religious leaders say Zuma is being persecuted for his stance on radical economic transformation and calling for land redistribution without compensation. Bishop Timothy Ngobo elaborates.
Zuma was about to give us a land expropriation without a compensation, and he was removed in the office because they foresee that Zuma is passionate with changing the lives of the poor and to change the lives of the people who are disadvantaged currently. So, and Zuma was trying by all means to change the focus from the west to the east.
Karl Niehaus of the MK Military Veterans Association maintains the charges against Zuma are politically motivated.
We feel that someone with an illustrious liberation career such as Comrade Jacob Zuma deserves our support as a comrade and also deserves our support because we believe that these charges that have been arraigned against him for now over 15 years are politically motivated and that a deliberate atmosphere had been created over years of vilification of Comrade Jacob Zuma, which will make it impossible for him to receive a free and fair trial.
Before Zuma's court appearance this morning, the supporters will start with a march from Dino Zulu Park in the CBD and will end at the Durban High Court. Various roads in the Durban CBD will be closed between Joseph Nduli, formerly known as Russell Street, and Jos Lovo, formerly Field Street. Security will be beefed up in and around the Durban High Court ahead of the court proceedings. I'm Fanele Mhlongo in Durban.
It is 8:31 Central African Time and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine. Our headlines up next with Anne Musa.
A very good morning to you. I'm Anne Musan. The headline, security is tight in and around the Durban High Court in South Africa's KwaZulu-Natal province ahead of former President Jacob Zuma's court appearance. Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza says he will support whoever succeeds him when his term ends, and 109 people are now known to have died in Sunday's volcanic eruption in Guatemala. Those are the stories making headlines.
Africa, rise and shine. Africa, zola. Africa, amka na unai.
It's 8:33 Central African Time and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine. We're coming to you live from Johannesburg in South Africa. Our South Africa this week joined the global community in marking World Heart Rhythm Week. The annual event aims to promote effective diagnosis and treatment of heart arrhythmia, a disorder affecting the rhythm of the heartbeat. Throughout the week, charities and professionals have been working together to raise awareness of the condition amongst the medical profession and the general public. Dr. Riaz Mutara, a South African cardiologist, joins us on the line to discuss this potentially life-threatening condition. Dr. Mutara, thank you so much for joining us on Africa Rise and Shine.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Now, what's the significance of marking World Heart Rhythm Week, and what was the focus this time around?
The focus this time around was, it's titled Taking Fainting to Heart. You know, one in two people in their lifetime will have a faint or a fainting episode, and arrhythmias or irregular heartbeats, may be the cause of that faint. So for the idea of having an annual week to raise awareness around arrhythmias is to make people aware that some of their symptoms or the way they present may be related to an abnormal heartbeat.
Now, for those who are not familiar with the concept, can you briefly explain what is meant by a heart rhythm disorder? We've heard of people with heart murmurs, and, just take us through very quickly in terms of how this works and how it can affect an individual.
Fine. So an arrhythmia or abnormal heartbeat is defined as a disorder affecting the rhythm of your heartbeat. So it can arise maybe from any structure of the heart. Usually, it can arise from abnormalities of the valves or the muscle of the heart or the nerve of the heart or even the arteries of the heart. As we all get older, we're also more prone to developing these abnormal heartbeats. And, you may have an overactive thyroid as an example that can also cause abnormal heartbeats. So there are factors that are outside the heart that can affect your heartbeat, and then factors within the heart itself that may cause an irregular rhythm. These rhythms may be either too fast or too slow. And some of them are benign. That means they may not cause any symptoms, and many patients are unaware of them. And some of them can be potentially fatal and can result in sudden death.
Now, what are the key symptoms of a heart rhythm disorder, and how do you know if you have the condition?
So most patients will experience what we would call palpitations, or that is an awareness of your heart beating either too fast or beating irregularly. So most patients would say, it feels like my heart is skipping a beat, or I feel a thump in my chest. Or when my heart races, I feel exceptionally lightheaded. Or I feel my heart beating very fast, and then I black out. Some patients may experience mild chest pain associated with it, and some patients may experience symptoms of anxiety associated with it as well. So most commonly, patients can feel that their heart is racing in their chest.
Which one is more dangerous? The one where, is it the one where your heart beats too fast, or is it the one where there's a couple of beats that are missed? Can you just explain which one is more dangerous?
Right. Usually the heart beats, the ones where the heart beats more than 180 beats per minute and are beating exceptionally fast, the body is unable to pump enough blood to the brain. And then you will black out. So you, without any warning, you have a sudden blackout and you may injure yourself. So you may have a fracture or you have a head injury or something like that. Some of the heartbeats, when they beat exceptionally slow, do exactly the same thing because you don't pump enough blood to the brain. There is an irregular heartbeat, a condition called atrial fibrillation, which is probably the commonest form of irregular heartbeat in the world. That exists, but most patients can live with it. As long as the heart is beating slightly slower and irregular, you can still live a normal life.
Now, who is most at risk of developing a disorder like that? And can the risks be reduced?
For sure. So, most patients who suffer with chronic high blood pressure or heart failure, patients who have had heart attacks, patients who have suffered with valve problems earlier on in life or have been born with an abnormal structure of the heart, any of the primary heart conditions that we all struggle from or that we know of can ultimately have a complication of an irregular heartbeat.
Now, doctor, what are the benefits of understanding one's own heart rate better and taking care of it?
For almost all forms of heartbeats can be, or irregular heart rhythms can be managed and can be safely managed and can be, you can prevent death and complications from having an irregular heartbeat if you know that you have the problem. So the easiest thing to do is if you feel that you have an irregular heartbeat or you struggle with having common faint, you know, many fainting episodes or feeling like you're going to faint, the easiest thing is to do is to go to your primary physician, let them do an ECG and have a general checkup done. Because if it is picked up, it is so easy to treat it.
Dr. Mutawa, is there any encouraging progress in the field of heart rhythm disorders in South Africa? And how far has the country come in diagnosing and treating these disorders?
The diagnosis is relatively easy once you see the patient. Many patients don't have access, I think even at primary level today, for the diagnosis to be made. So many patients suffer with the complications, end up in hospital, and then the penny drops that, oh, okay, this patient has an abnormal heartbeat, and then maybe referred on to a tertiary center for further treatment. The treatment, or, you know, for the past maybe 50 years, has been largely through medication, and more in the recent past, techniques have been developed to be able to map the electrical pathways in the heart and to treat the abnormal nerves or pathways in the heart where you can potentially get a cure for these abnormal heartbeats.
Dr. Mutawa, thank you so much for joining us. We'll leave it there for now.
Thank you.
And that's Dr. Riaz Mutawa, a South African cardiologist, joining us on the line. Let us all unite and
celebrate together. This is indeed a joyous night. We are delighted by the overwhelming support for the African National Congress. To the people of South Africa and the world, this is indeed a joyous night for the human spirit. Your health and apartheid.
This year, 2018, marks 100 years since the birth of South Africa's first democratically elected president, Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela. Join Channel Africa, South Africa's international public service radio station, as we celebrate a centenary of the life and times of Madiba. Join us in a year-long broadcast campaign in honor of Nelson Mandela's legacy through a variety of informative radio programs. Channel Africa, celebrating 100 years of Nelson Mandela from an African perspective. Let us make Africa the tree of
life. African innovators currently meeting in Kigali, Rwanda, have called on governments to support this sector. They said more efforts are required to invest in innovations to provide solutions of continental problems. Channel Africa's Silvanus Karamera reports from Kigali.
It is a meeting that converges different innovators, entrepreneurs, politicians, researchers and experts in different areas. Some Africans who have innovated some technologies, especially those from Zimbabwe and South Africa, say they are happy of their progress regardless of their day-to-day challenges.
Our communities are not yet believing in ourselves, and we're very much here trying to say, guys, we're actually building technologies that can take over the world. Let's start to realize that we have that potential, and let's change the narrative of saying our African innovators are not good enough. We're very good enough and we're very competent.
So we ask our governments, financial institutions, your banks, your pension funds, your provident funds, and your asset managers, do we really allow them to invest in innovations, to invest in startups, to take risk on the youth?
Africans were encouraged to find solutions of the problems still affecting Africa in different aspects, especially in energy infrastructure, agriculture, leadership, medicine, and more others. Speaking to this gathering, Rwanda's Prime Minister, Dr. Edward Nyerere, said the solution to Africans' challenges lies in the ability of Africans to innovate, create jobs for Africans still living in abject poverty.
Africa has, over the past decade, consistently invested in infrastructure development, agriculture, conducive policy and the regulatory environment to attract private sector. Despite this, Africa has not been able to leverage the private sector as an engine for transformation that is needed to make up for its delay in development and expand economic opportunities for its youth. The fact is, the only way to overcome this and other challenges facing African countries is innovation. We must innovate. We must build robust ecosystems for innovation.
The government here has confirmed the willingness of establishing a fund to support research projects and innovations, and this would contribute to innovation solutions that would solve the country's current challenges. This second Africa Innovation Summit, which comes 4 years after the first gathering in Cape Verde, aims at encouraging the innovation sector on the continent to move an extra mile in ensuring the continent's presence at international arena in science and technology. Silvanus Karemera, reporting for Channel Africa in Kigali.
Habari, etise, mache, mingabo, baoni, kedu, mbote, ndemne, bonsoir. Join me, Richard Mwamba, for a music show on Channel Africa called Africa in Song, every Saturday and Sunday from 18 to 20 hours Central African Time. Africa in Song, Saturday and Sunday from 18 to 20 hours Central African Time.
Our economics update up next with Tabiso Luhuku.
Thanks, Lulu, and good morning. South Africa's trade union, NUMSA, says it is officially headed for a strike following a deadlock in wage negotiations with the power utility Eskom. NUMSA says its decision comes after power utility consistently refused to offer a wage increase without providing audited financial statements. The union's demands include a 15% wage increase, a $155 housing allowance increase, and an 80% contribution to medical aid. NUMSA's spokesperson, Phakamile Hlubi Majola.
Eskom management has also confirmed that they have declared a deadlock with us, and this means that there will be no more talks. We are officially headed for a strike. Trade unions are united in their fight for an increase and refuse to be blamed for the financial losses caused by corrupt managers at the state-owned entity. We will be mobilizing all our members and all workers to embark on a complete shutdown of Eskom if they continue to refuse to engage meaningfully with our demands.
South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa will join leaders of the Group of Seven Nations that will meet in Quebec, Canada, over the next 2 days. They will pressure the U.S. President Donald Trump to reverse the tariffs he's imposed on the imports of steel and aluminium, sparking fears of a trade war that could undermine global economic growth. Ramaphosa is one of the developing world leaders who have also been invited to the exclusive club. Trump's America First policy and the imposition of protectionist measures on even their closest allies, including hosts Canada and the European Union, have pundits are calling for a showdown in Canada. French President Emmanuel Macron was among the first heads of state and government to arrive.
Les six autres pays du G7.
I will repeat to President Trump what we've just explained here, that measures taken are counterproductive, including for his own economy. For me, it's a question of principle. We can't wage a trade war between allies. We are all engaged in conflicts in Syria, in Iraq, in the Sahel, and in other places in the world. We are allies, and we exchange critical information. Our soldiers stand together to protect freedom and our values. In the international context we face today, we can't have a trade war. It's a question of principle. Along with Prime Minister Trudeau and all of our partners, I will try to convince him to find a way back to normal on trade issues, because we need to resolve this tension.
African innovators meeting in Kigali, Rwanda, have called on governments to support this sector. They said more efforts are required to invest in innovations to provide solutions of continental problems. Sylvanus Karamera reports.
It is a meeting that converges different innovators, entrepreneurs, politicians, researchers and experts in different areas. Some Africans who have innovated some technologies, especially those from Zimbabwe and South Africa, say they are happy of their progress regardless of their day-to-day challenges.
The United States has confirmed that it has struck a deal with the Chinese telecoms giant ZTE. The firm faced going out of business after being banned from buying U.S. components. The U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross says ZTE has now agreed to pay a fine and to change its board and management. The BBC's Paul Blake reports.
Major operations at ZTE ceased and thousands were put out of work after the U.S. banned the company from buying American components in April. Now the U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross says that ZTE has agreed to change its board and management within 30 days and pay a $1 billion fine. Mr. Ross says the deal puts strict compliance standards on the firm and that the U.S. would retain the ability to reimpose the ban. The move comes as the U.S. continues to negotiate trade tariffs with China, as well as with European and North American allies.
The U.S. dollar trades at 9.84 in Botswana. It's at 10.8 in Zambia. In BRICS currencies, the U.S. dollar trades at 3.87 Brazilian real, at 6.22 Russian ruble, and at 6.68 Indian rupee, 6.38 in Chinese yuan, and 12.84 to the South African rand. It's also trading at 7.4 pence to the British pound, 8.4 cents to the euro. Gold $1,296, platinum $899 an ounce. The price of Brent crude oil is at $76.54 a barrel. I'm Tebiso Lohoko for Channel Africa.
A sports update up next with Figile Lingwati. So Figile, tomorrow we are all watching the Springboks. What time is the game?
Playing in the afternoon.
Okay, so and then Sunday it's the Comrades.
Yeah, Sunday is the Comrades, early hours of the morning. A different route, a finish that is historical as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also we're waiting. The days are drawing nearer and nearer for the World Cup as well.
The World Cup starts next week.
The 14th of
Thursday,
June.
Friday, yes, Thursday.
14th. Yeah. Yes. So, wow. Everybody's in Russia now. What we're waiting for is the final. All the 11 starting 11s. Now we should know who will be starting. And also we will be checking our COSAFA. How is it going to pan out as well? But it's not so popular. I don't know why, because it should, as a Southern African competition. But anyway, it's sporty weekend.
Okay. Something to look forward to. Give us an update.
Lord. In athletics, Adam Lutolo has caught the eye as one of the South Africa's promising athletes. The athlete from the Nelson Mandela University in South Africa's Eastern Cape province pulled a surprise victory in the men's 200 meter in Hengelo in the Netherlands and a splendid second position just 2 days later in another international event in Finland. Our correspondent Geshom Nyati reports.
I think first and foremost, we're always looking for a South African winner, men's and ladies, and I think the South Africans have learned how to run this race and they're not scared of the foreign domination from that point of view. And Comrades continues to grow with the international contingent that comes out. We have 1,430 international runners running this year. That's off the continent of Africa, and then we have 554 runners.
And the 93rd running of the Comrades Marathon takes place this weekend with organizers optimistic. Their historic move to end the race at the iconic Moses Mabhida Stadium will be the start of growing the race even further. This year also sees a record number of countries represented in the race. There will be runners from 79 different nations at the start lineup on Sunday. And Morocco coach Hervé Renard made one surprise omission from his final World Cup squad by omitting one-time Southampton record signing Sofiane Boufal at home. Morocco improved markedly through the African qualifiers to emerge as the form team from the continent heading to the World Cup. But their chances of making an impact in Russia were dealt a blow, a very heavy one, at December's draw. The North Africans were paired with the reigning European champions Portugal and their predecessor Spain in Group B and opened the campaign with a tough encounter against Iran. They start their campaign at St. Petersburg on the 15th of June. And England sprung a few surprises when they named their team for the opening match of the three-game test series against Springboks in Johannesburg on Saturday, with New Zealand base forward Brett Shields thrust straight into the mix.
He was undoubtedly nervous about that, coming to a squad. You know, it's difficult when you come to a different team, particularly when you've been playing your domestic rugby in a different country, but he's fitted in extremely well. Everyone knows he's genuine about wanting to play for England, and so the transition for him has been very good. Just how impressive is it in learning his information, gelling with the squad, adding to the squad. Yeah, he's a good player. He's going to add to the squad, add value to the squad.
History is to be made when hosts flanker Siya Kolisi will become the first black player to captain the Springboks. And Jones admits that the move will inspire the nation.
Look, I'm sure that selection will certainly be uplifting for the country. I've experienced it. I think I told the story before about when we played, Wallabies played the Springboks when I think it was Nelson Mandela's 80th birthday. So I hope it's not Galeese's birthday on Saturday. It's not his birthday, is it?
No, it's not.
Let's not make it his birthday.
That's your sport news this hour.
Channel Africa brings you wall-to-wall coverage of the 2018 FIFA World Cup finals in Russia. Visit our dedicated World Cup page on www.channelafrica.org.za for in-depth coverage, which includes previews, reviews, analysis, breaking news and a podcast of latest interviews. We will also bring you the very latest news from Russia with our Nigerian correspondent Tony Ubani and the BBC's reporters in our daily hourly sports bulletins and on the Africa at Play sports show on Friday, Saturday and Sunday from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Central African time. Channel Africa, your home of the 2018 FIFA World Cup final.
Africa, rise and shine. Africa, zola. Africa, amuka na unai.
Recapping our top stories in Africa, rise and shine at the Sawa. South Africa's former president returns to court to face corruption charges. Sudan offers to host peace talks between South Sudan rivals. New report says Zimbabwe lacks reforms to ensure fair elections, and South Africa set to be voted onto the UN Security Council. That wraps up Africa Rise and Shine this week. For myself, Lulu Gabu, producers Phumutso Ramagaza and Phumutso Mopulane, technical producer Sihle Ndlovu, and the rest of the team, thank you for joining us. For comments about our show, send us an email at info@channelafrica.co.za/org. Or WhatsApp on 277-6300-3327 or tweet us at Rise Shine Africa or at Channel Africa 1. Taking us to the top of the hour for the news on the frequency 7230 kHz on the 41-meter band to Southern Africa is Musa Manzini with a track titled Blue Bass.
This century as an African century. We need to take a stand now and say